Hey there, welcome back to the Forum, where science comes to socialize.
The one and only podcast of the Institute on Science for Global Policy. My name's Aubrey, and Cleo and Daniela are here with me today, as usual, for our Monday chat.
Hey everyone, so what's on the agenda today?
Well, just a warning in advance that today's topic is a bit heavier than usual. We'll be discussing the lack of internationally streamlined efforts to address viral threats, with a focused look at HIV/AIDS.
And this means we'll be covering the debate of Dr. Robert Gallo's policy position paper titled The Need for Expanded Global Efforts to Mitigate Viral Threats, Lessons from the HIV/AIDS Epidemic.
Dr. Gallo is the director of the Institute on Human Virology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, as well as the director of the Global Virus Network, which you'll be hearing a lot more about by the end of the episode.
And his policy position paper was written for the 2011 ISGP conference called Emerging and Persistent Infectious Diseases, Focus on Mitigation, over on my side of the pond, here in the UK at the University of Edinburgh, Scotland.
Hey, Aubrey, remember our first episode from this conference when you thought it was pronounced Edinburgh?
Shh, Cleo, you're ruining my image. People are supposed to think I'm smart.
Well, as a friendly reminder, be sure to follow us on Twitter at ISGP Forum, and you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ISGP Forum. Now let's dive right in so that our listeners don't have to go and read the position paper, because who does that these days, right? Let's start by outlining the current issue that Dr. Gallo describes.
All right. So Dr. Gallo begins by pointing out that the time period in which HIV/AIDS was discovered also generally witnessed a wave of progress in disease surveillance, HIV being just one example of success. So for a little bit of a timeline, we've got the discovery of the first human retrovirus in 1980, the discovery of HIV in 1983, the identification of HIV as the cause of AIDS in 1984, and the development of the first systemic virus-specific therapy in 1986.
But despite this progress that we can recognize today, there were pretty glaring deficiencies in the global response to the HIV/AIDS pandemic at its onset. And therefore, HIV/AIDS remains a major global public health issue today.
The major issue was that during the initial response to the disease in the early 1980s, there were no medical virologists in positions of authority. Due to a lack of proper information, technology infrastructure, the few available medical virologists were not capable of communicating rapidly, or at least not as rapidly as needed.
Wait, that's a bit vague. What do you mean by positions of authority? Are you talking about a lack of virologists in governmental organizations?
Well, yeah. At the onset of the AIDS epidemic, the United States Center of Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, for example, had no retrovirologists employed since such viruses weren't really considered to impact humans.
Right. So these scientists, the very ones that you're arguing made key progress in the early years of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, Dee, they arrived at this problem of human afflicting HIV/AIDS almost by chance. It wasn't really their job to initiate an effort to understand and combat HIV/AIDS because, well, there was little feeling that HIV represented a major threat. So that meant that no organizations really helped to prioritize and drive the initial response to this new disease.
Exactly. And since the 80s, the global spread of viral threats in general has accelerated. So we can no longer afford to rely on virologists' good luck or just happy accidents to provide the expertise needed to overcome these significant threats to human health.
And just a quick interjection to make sure we're all on the same page. Virology is a study of viral infections, such as rubella, herpes, hepatitis, and of course, HIV. So a virologist is someone who studies these sorts of viral infections. Virologists are part of a larger sphere of clinical microbiologists specializing in the identification and characterization of viruses that cause infection. And retrovirology is a subfield which refers to the specific single-stranded RNA viruses, which includes HIV, whose longer name is human immunodeficiency virus.
And in case you're not familiar with the specifics, HIV is a lentivirus that causes infection and, over time, acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, or AIDS. AIDS is a condition in humans in which progressive failure of the immune system allows life-threatening opportunistic infections and cancers to thrive. Infection with HIV occurs by the transfer of bodily fluids such as blood or breast milk.
And to give us some context for viral threats here, let's just reflect back to the influenza pandemic of 1918 and even the polio epidemic of the 1940s. The influenza pandemic of 1918 was one of the deadliest natural disasters in human history, infecting 500 million people around the world, including remote Pacific islands and even the Arctic. The pandemic resulted in the deaths of 50 to 100 million people, which was about 3 to 5% of the world's population. Thinking about the US alone during that time, life expectancy dropped by about 12 years in 1918. So, yeah, hopefully you can understand the severity.
And with regards to the polio epidemic in the 1940s, over 40,000 cases were reported in just the United States.
So the point Aubrey and Cleo were trying to make is that mankind just was straight up not prepared to deal with these outbreaks. So the repercussions were severe.
Debaters at this conference agreed that because virology laboratories had generally become involved in infectious disease mitigation by chance, you know, as opposed to making more deliberate preventive efforts, coordination of viral outbreak responses has traditionally been very limited.
Which means that a successful response can't be guaranteed.
Exactly. But on top of that, the CDC only represents one country and is a function of the US government. And this often creates streamlining problems and means that the CDC doesn't always speak to or freely consult with other governments.
And the fact of the matter is that the global spread of viral threats continues to accelerate. So Dr. Gallo argues that we can no longer have the luxury of relying on chance to overcome these threats to human health.
Well, yes, but in more recent years, we've been better equipped when it comes to preparedness, and we have a wealth of knowledge from past mistakes. So, talking about getting something good out of a bad situation, we now have the motivation to invest in the research, training, and global infrastructure needed to solve current viral threats. The AIDS pandemic and the emergence of newer sources of funding, like the Gates Foundation, have ensured that a significant number of groups and organizations and institutions are actively engaging in the fight against global infectious disease.
As a case in point, Dr. Gallo actually co-founded a global network in 2011 with the goal of promoting the engagement of medical virologists in the fight against new viral epidemics. This organization, which we referred to earlier, is called the Global Virus Network, GVN.
Huh, how appropriate.
The Global Virus Network is an international coalition of leading medical virologists spanning more than 20 countries worldwide. The network works to advance knowledge about how viruses make us sick and develop diagnostics, antiviral drugs, and vaccines.
And its mission includes strengthening medical research and response mechanisms for current viral burdens on human health. As of 2016, the Venezuelan virologist José Esparza is the network's newest president.
And while organizations like this do reflect progress in collective efforts against pandemic viral infections, another critical concern still exists, namely an apparent decline in young people training for careers in virology.
Aubrey's favorite topic, complaining that more kids need to get into sciences. Which is actually pretty ironic because she doesn't even like kids that much.
Hey! Okay, let's not, which is really even funnier because at a recent ISGP conference, we had a whole conversation about my dislike for children. But let's not do that here, okay?
All right, well, we sound friendly to the children listening out there. Anyway, as much as I hate to admit it, and I do hate to admit it, when Aubrey's right, she does have a good point. Problems do emanate from medical training programs, which some debaters perceived as being overly narrow and prescriptive. These debaters agreed that current medical training, both pre- and post-qualification, does not equip doctors to become physician scientists. Actually, the system for training doctors over here in the United Kingdom is a perfect example. The popularity of problem-based learning in medical schools means that doctors no longer have a sufficiently rigorous academic base on which to build a career in scientific research.
You know, Dee, another example over on your side of the pond that I learned from the debaters, actually, is that there's been a decline in the practice of sending young doctors from more wealthy countries to train abroad, and current curricula don't guarantee sufficient exposure of students to tropical diseases. As a result, unsurprisingly, doctors are unable to recognize diseases that are rare in their home countries but common overseas.
So, all in all, the lack of people training for careers in virology may be due to a few main issues. So you have the decline in young medical doctors going into basic research, the decline of young medical students training abroad, reduced government support for infectious disease research, and hasty public complacency about viral threats after short-term concern.
Right. And an important consequence of our quote-unquote short-term memory about viral diseases is that we fail to support research and training programs needed to ensure the long-term supply of expert medical virologists.
And while the extraordinary development of virus surveillance networks over the past 25 years produces a mountain of information, without expert medical virologists, we're unprepared to grasp its importance and use it for developing disease mitigation strategies.
Which reminds me, you all know how much I love analogies after my infamous Jersey Shore GMO comparison during SynBio Live. So let me pull another one out here for you. Okay, here it goes. National and wildlife park managers may be numerous and good at overall surveillance of predatory populations, but they need skilled experts who know how to take care of the dangerous predators once they've been found. Without a substantial and durable program for research and training, we remain ill-prepared in the face of constantly emerging viral threats.
I don't know, man. That wasn't as good as transplanting JWoww into the middle of Kansas or wherever we said.
Right, but at least this one totally made sense. Give me that.
All right, I guess it did, but it somehow had me thinking about safaris, and it made me wonder why you'd be thinking about safaris, and you know, I don't know.
Definitely is the strangest example Dee has pulled out before, but in any case, debaters agreed that it's essential for the global virus network to effectively communicate its goals to overcome the generally short attention span of the public and policy communities. The absence of a single authoritative, internationally recognized body of experts in medical virology opens the door to inappropriate and damaging responses to new viral diseases.
Right. While the Global Virus Network has resulted in a lot of progress, it might be able to work towards becoming this authoritative body.
The challenge, really, is to fill the gaps in training, research, and policymaking that lie between virus surveillance efforts and healthcare delivery.
And the gaps in research are uniquely frustrating, as debaters suggested that there are considerable difficulties in executing the broad interdisciplinary research that would be really impactful here.
Right. The debaters concluded that, at present, the scientific community's understanding about how to successfully carry out interdisciplinary projects is definitely insufficient.
So why is this the case?
Well, interdisciplinary research programs are tricky to fund because of widespread perceptions that such studies garner only superficial results. And coming from the hard science community, this misconception really isn't surprising to me. Since it's exceptionally difficult to create strong interdisciplinary links while simultaneously touching on individual disciplines, depth of understanding is sacrificed as a consequence.
For example, a recent call by a major funding agency for interdisciplinary research projects that would study the ecology, environment, and sociology of emerging infections failed to fund any of the submitted research proposals because none were deemed to be strong enough in each of the disciplines they covered.
But research has been published on how best to develop, fund, and evaluate interdisciplinary studies, hasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely has, but the advice is rarely adopted. And on top of that, it takes very specific skill sets to run interdisciplinary projects well, which the majority of virologists either don't have or don't recognize as a priority. It sounds like we have a lot of mindset issues floating around here.
And mindset or perception issues invoke a discussion of breaking barriers, a conversation that the debaters had. Some of the debaters thought that this was a very real concern about the Global Virus Network, saying that the organization would do little to break barriers between disciplines.
That is true, but we can't conquer every challenge at once, one actionable step at a time, right? Those debaters who didn't feel that breaking down these barriers was the purpose of the Global Virus Network countered that this body would still fill a much-needed niche in pure virology expertise, which is essential for establishing a scientific base that can be drawn on when new diseases emerge.
Moreover, if the scope of the Global Virus Network was expanded, it might become difficult to draw lines defining its actual purpose. And that, boys and girls, is something we don't have time or need to think about quite so much today, being not board members or other authorities within the GVN.
The need for this niche of pure virology expertise to be filled was exemplified by the economic losses China suffered because of its severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, outbreak. It's clear that screening efforts require the participation of a recognized body of experts to formulate a rational response.
Right, but let's not forget that in terms of screening, agencies such as the CDC and the World Health Organization, or WHO, do provide these surveillance networks. However, the issue is that they don't have sufficient resources to address two critical questions. One, what are the aspects of viral threats that require new research? And two, how can we train expert medical virologists to overcome the deficit and provide future scientists who recognize the imperative of international collaboration?
To address these challenges, the Global Virus Network has set a hefty handful of goals that you need two hands to count out. Are you all ready? I'm about to throw all 10 at you at once. And go. One, an international base. Two, freedom from political interests. Three, collaboration to advance our global knowledge. Four, training new virologists. Five, linkage to the WHO. Six, more puppies for graduate students. Seven, advisory capacity to guide policy and share expertise on all classes of human viruses. Eight, response to new threats. Nine, virus discovery via research. 10, preparedness. And 11, global scientific exchange.
Did you just say puppies
for graduate students?
I just wanted to see if you were paying attention.
What?
Okay, but why just graduate students? I mean, I would love a puppy, but I don't really understand.
You passed the test, okay?
I can't. All right, moving on.
So for the record, the Global Virus Network doesn't actually have any goals related to puppies, but if the network's comprised of rational people, they probably wouldn't object.
Anyway, this seems like a perfect time to change the subject. So, survey says policymakers should look toward these Global Virus Network goals as opportunities for policy actions.
For example, in November of 2010, Prime Minister Singh of India and then US President Obama signed a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, creating a new global disease detection, GDD, center in New Delhi, which is tasked with facilitating preparedness against health threats such as pandemic influenza and other dangerous viruses. Several of these GDD centers have been established as part of the US CDC program to enhance global capabilities. The risk, though, is that they could be viewed as surveillance arms of the US government.
So, a good backup plan would be to associate such centers as valuable links within the Global Virus Network or another similar organization without governmental ties.
And as centers become links with organizations such as the Global Virus Network, building relationships between them will prove even easier, as new information technology would make it possible to establish a global infrastructure enabling the rapid, secure exchange of information. Collecting, analyzing, reporting, and acting on this information would transform and enhance preparedness and even serve as a powerful weapon to combat outbreaks.
And in order to enable such preparedness, there are several steps Dr. Gallo and the debaters recommended taking.
First, a recognized and sanctioned body of experts, such as the Global Virus Network, should be empowered to mitigate damage following early reports of viral outbreaks. By increasing the stature and visibility of the Global Virus Network, the international community can provide more opportunities for eminent scientists to become involved in multinational policy decisions.
Not only should opportunities for existing scientists be prioritized, but we also need opportunities focused on prospective scientists and virologists. Dr. Gallo and the debaters agreed that fellowship programs should be funded through governments, corporate partnerships, and non-governmental organizations to train doctoral candidates in medical virology.
A well-trained base of virologists could then participate in the proposed authoritative bodies. These global infectious disease organizations should be convened such that each center is financed by its host country and a percentage of annual funding is earmarked by the organization for use in outbreak emergencies.
It always comes down to finances, doesn't it?
Afraid so, Cleo.
Well, since I know finances doesn't excite you too much, Cleo, why don't we sum up what we've discussed for our listeners real quick and wrap it up?
Good idea, Dee. All right, so we've established that the main issue at the time of this debate was a critical gap between virus surveillance efforts and the implementation of clinical responses, caused primarily by the lack of international coordination for research on viral diseases and the shortage of medical virologists capable of reacting once surveillance efforts uncover a problem.
This gap jeopardizes the ability to deliver health services and threatens economies, supply chains, medical resources, and both national and international security.
There are also serious deficiencies in training programs for research in medical virology, which threatens our future capacity to control viral epidemics.
Finally, Dr. Gallo argued for a mechanism to ensure that new viral threats are met with a sophisticated international response to identify those viruses, develop new diagnostics, initiate the path to discovery of treatments or vaccines, and advise about the best mitigation strategies.
However, the Global Virus Network, which is equipped with globally connected information technology enabling rapid communication between participants, has expanded its efforts in the past handful of years to meet the needs and challenges laid out in this episode.
So, what do you think? Are we doing enough to address increasing viral threats?
How can we incentivize more young people to study virology? Heck, let's get personal. Would you study virology? Why or why not?
Let us know what you think by tweeting us at ISGP Forum or connecting with us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/ISGP Forum. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time right here on the forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.